What's up and welcome to the Badass is the New Skinny podcast. I'm Sabrina, and as a certified personal trainer and health coach, I'm here to help you live your best and most badass life. This space is for all the hot messes out there who are tired of feeling out of control, stuck, frustrated, and not at home in their own body. We'll focus on mindset, attitude, and habits surrounding sleep, stress management, nutrition, and movement so that you're showing up for your whole self. Badass isn't a look, it's an attitude. It's an energy. So wherever you're at, settle in and get comfy. Let's do this. Hey friends, welcome back to Badass is the New Skinny. In my last episode, I had mentioned the transition from the food pyramid to my plate guidance, and it got me thinking about all kinds of things related to, well, food and nutrition propaganda. I'm starting to sound like a conspiracy theorist. I swear I'm not. This stuff is just fascinating to me. For example, I'm part of the Got Milk era. I drank milk at dinner every night and often with snacks. I loved it. I still do, if I'm being honest. It's just not part of my routine anymore to drink regular old milk. And then there was beef. It's what's for dinner. Dig deep into your memory bank for a second and think about what beliefs you hold about certain foods and then ask yourself, where do those beliefs come from? In today's conversation, I'm primarily going to be picking on the food pyramid and choose my plate. Why? Well, because these, my friends, are touted as healthy eating recommendations from none other than the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA. Now, I talk a lot on this podcast about the overabundance of information and that you need to be mindful about where you get your information from. Make sure you're trusting reliable expert sources. But how do you do that when the expert, quote-unquote, sources are part of the problem when it comes to misinformation? To be clear, I'm mostly talking about food recommendations from the USDA. Transparently, I honestly believe that Choose My Plate recommendations offer much better guidance for a healthy diet on a very general level. But I still want to talk about USDA recommendations more broadly because I think it's important to, again, be curious and take nothing at face value. USDA food recommendations have been around for a long time, starting with the basic seven food groups in 1943 during World War II, which then became the basic four in 1954, which was made up of milk, meat, fruits and veggies, and bread and cereals. Interesting. Okay. This lasted until 1991. Again, in case that wasn't clear, the government nutrition recommendations from 1954 to 1991 were milk, meat, fruits and veggies, and bread and cereals. Now, I'm not talking about the initial basic seven right now because it's a wonky array of food recommendations divvied up in strange ways, including three different food groups for various fruits and vegetables. I recommend looking into it on your own. It's interesting to see what the thought process was at the time. Let's move on, though. It's 1991, and the USDA is regrouping around what the food recommendations should be, and for too many years, milk and meat topped the list of food group recommendations. So let's talk about the food pyramid for a moment. A brief history is that it was originally developed in Sweden in the 1970s, and the USDA adopted it in 1992. If you're not familiar with the food pyramid, this was a visual representation of how many servings of different food types people should eat in order to maintain a healthy diet, with the bottom being what you should have the most servings of, and the top being what you should have the least servings of. Breads, rice, pasta, and cereal, think all your starchy carbohydrates, made up the bottom of the pyramid, recommending a whopping 6 to 11 servings a day. Up next were the 3 to 5 servings of veggies and 2 to 4 servings of fruit. Above that, you had 2 to 3 servings of milk, yogurt, and cheese, and 2 to 3 servings of meat, poultry, fish, beans, nuts, etc. And at the tippy top, you had fats and sweets with the guidance to eat sparingly. Now, I don't know what's wrong with my brain, but I could swear that when I was in school, it was taught that things like dairy products and meat products came before fruits and veggies, but I'm not finding any proof that that was ever the case, so I'm going to chalk it up to my faulty memory. But if anyone else remembers it that way and I'm not completely losing my mind, let me know. Regardless, the food pyramid was riddled with issues from the get-go, and food lobbyists were chomping at the bit before it was released in 1992. It said that folks from the meat and dairy industry in particular were up in arms about how these products were positioned on the food pyramid, and what happened next just goes on to solidify the power behind these food industries. Because do you remember the two campaigns I referenced at the beginning of this? The Got Milk campaign and Beef, It's What's for Dinner campaign? Well, guess what? The food pyramid update hit in 1992, right? We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. The beef campaign was also launched in 1992. And the milk campaign was close behind it in 1993. I cannot emphasize enough how much this blew my mind, because when I sat down to get into scripting this out, those were just genuinely the two campaigns that I remember from my childhood. I remember them so clearly, and they lasted a pretty long time, all things considered. I can't think of a single celebrity that didn't get in on the Got Milk campaign and have their pictures taken with thick milk mustaches. It didn't help that my mom was a huge milk advocate, chanting teeth and bones, whenever anyone questioned milk, especially for growing kiddos. And I'm not going to go so far as to say that this is all totally misled. There are definite nutrition benefits to these foods. But they're also not the only foods that offer these nutrition benefits, and I think that's where this starts to get pretty sketchy. Milk, for example, is not the only source of calcium. Beef is not the only source of protein. Getting back to the food pyramid, though, you would think that food lobbyists wouldn't matter so much and that the government recommendations should be based on scientific research and all of that. And I guess, to give them some credit, they did try. But, as I talked about in my last episode, the government isn't known for being an objective player in the game. The USDA had hit pause on the food pyramid recommendations in 1991, while they dealt with meat and dairy lobbyists and conducted additional research. The problem is that the final results were still pretty heavily influenced by these other food industries, meaning that society as a whole was not given a completely objective, health-focused recommendation from this source that was supposed to have their best interest at heart. There are a variety of controversial issues with the food pyramid that I haven't gotten into here, but I figure this is enough to make my point. To take a quick detour, consider that this is what was taught in schools and promoted in children's books and all of that. I went on quite a bit about milk and meat, but remember also that breads, grains, pasta, and cereal made up the whole base of the pyramid. This also makes me think of something else that my mom used to say growing up, which was, three squares make a round, meaning that three square meals a day with the food recommendations that we were given was a recipe for overeating and getting fat. Thinking back on stuff like this with my fully developed adult brain has been an interesting adventure. I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, with all that in mind, you can probably imagine why the Atkins diet was such an extreme recommendation when it gained popularity in 2003 and 2004. Because by then, for the last 10 plus years, the government had been teaching us that carbohydrates made up the bulk of our recommended daily diet. And then there was the Atkins diet telling people to cut carbs and to some extent enjoy meats and fats to your heart's content. And now we have the keto craze, which is basically the same thing, but I'll avoid that rabbit hole for now. Side note, the Atkins diet had been around since the early 1960s, but it was ridiculed for decades for being dangerous and harmful to your health. It hit a very brief high in 2003, and the Atkins company went bankrupt by 2005. It seems like some of the popularity might have been from Atkins' death in 2003, the actual Dr. Atkins who wrote the book that gained so much popularity, and his death might have been what prompted the spike in book sales and whatnot, but honestly, in the quick searching that I did, I couldn't find anything definitive about why it suddenly became so popular that 1 in 11 people were on this diet. But I do remember it being a thing because I was working at McDonald's at the time, and suddenly everyone was ordering their burgers without buns. Oddly enough, I don't remember it influencing French fry sales, but whatever, maybe it did. And that was a fun tangent, but let's move on. The food pyramid. A pretty graphic to help people prioritize recommended food group servings. Fun times. The food pyramid existed in this structure until 2005, when the food pyramid became my pyramid and turned the horizontal dividers 90 degrees to suddenly it was just a rainbow of vertical colors in the shape of a pyramid. This is so funny to me because the graphic became more abstract and often didn't include pictures of food at all. And along the left side of it, there were stairs and like this little stick figure person climbing those stairs. From what I've found, this was to also incorporate the role of movement and exercise along with a healthy diet. This is just funny to me, though I can't really articulate why. So anyway, this version hung around until 2011. I don't know as much about it from personal education experience because from 2005 to 2011, I was not actively engaged in any basic nutrition education like I was when I was just a kid in elementary school learning about the food pyramid built on that foundation of carbs. And in 2011, my plate replaced my pyramid, which was the second iteration of the food pyramid, and my plate really does make more sense. The plate is divided in half, with half of it being fruits and veggies, with the larger of the portion given to veggies, and protein and grains each taking a quarter of the other side of the plate, and a little circle off to the side to represent dairy. While I think there are still some things that are problematic about this, I do think it's the least problematic of all the iterations from the USDA, especially when the idea is to provide general education about a generally healthy diet. Proteins aren't limited to just meats. Grains are called out rather than identifying them as different types of carbohydrates like breads and pastas and that sort of thing. I think that's good because one thing that doesn't get talked about enough is that fruits and veggies are largely carbohydrates, even if they are a different class of carbohydrate than, say, wheats or grains. And I'm not going to go into simple versus complex carbohydrates right now because it's really just sort of irrelevant to this conversation. I just wanted to acknowledge that fruits and veggies are also carbohydrates. It's just different. Anyway, moving on. Now, the basic seven, the basic four, the food pyramid, both versions of it, and my plate are all examples of the USDA trying to simplify complex nutrition concepts so that they can be easily taught and understood at all levels. This is admirable, and I think that there is a definite need for this in society in general. But since the 1980s, the USDA has also been publishing the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which is updated every 5 years and is my source of truth for nutrition guidance as a certified health coach. Not because I chose it, but because my certification calls for that, and it's what I am allowed to reference to still stay within my scope of practice. Sometimes this is tough for me because even now these guidelines are not without their criticisms and controversies for being influenced by the agriculture industry. I'll be honest, a lot of this leads me to think, well, then who the hell am I supposed to trust when it comes to nutrition guidance if these quote-unquote sources of truth are riddled with controversial issues? It's a complicated question, and it's why I get so frustrated with how information is shared, especially on social media. Because I'd be willing to bet that when you hear something or see something on social media, you don't then go and look it up to see if it's legit. Even with this podcast, are you going to fact check the information I've shared? Probably not. I haven't even touched on the power of anecdotal evidence, be it evil power or otherwise. This, again, is another episode and conversation all by itself, and I will work on that because it's pretty terrifying when you really think about it. My whole point with all of this is that information from pretty much any source is going to be biased in one way or another. It's incredibly difficult to find information that is truly objective and based on science, especially when scientific research takes so much time and has to be controlled in such specific ways in order to be legitimate. What I will say is that I'm working on my nutrition coaching certification through Precision Nutrition, and I'm much more likely to trust the information I'm getting from there than I am from other sources. Not to say that it's perfect, but I do believe that this company does the best it can to teach scientifically supported information about nutrition, and they practice transparency when it comes to their sources for information. They list all of their sources, all of it can be looked up and is accessible, and I really appreciate that about what they teach. So what does all of this mean, and what's the point of this conversation? It's mostly because I'm fascinated by how greed influences what are deemed as trusted sources of information, and I'm constantly reminded that it's important to have healthy levels of skepticism and curiosity. And at the end of the day, my heart goes out to all of the people who are struggling to make healthy food choices, and they're just trying to go about it in the right way and take good care of themselves, only to unknowingly be misled and left feeling frustrated and defeated. It's why it's so important to me to work with people one-on-one. There are general guidelines to help people eat a healthy diet and take care of themselves, and while things like My Plate aren't perfect, it's also not terrible for a very generalized recommendation. But individuals aren't general. Individuals come complete with history, experiences, culture, expectations, trauma, health conditions, values, priorities, limitations, and so forth. So general recommendations really aren't all that helpful. They're more of a starting point. Shit, in just this one episode, I've shared some anecdotes of things that I've experienced and what I learned and remember that have shaped the way that I eat and think about food and a healthy diet. There are a lot of things that I'm trying to relearn because the beliefs about food and health that I was raised with don't take into account so many things that I've learned and experienced since then. And yet, I will always remember JTT and the Olsen twins with their great big milk mustaches, and there may never be a day when I don't build my meals around a protein source, which is pretty much always meat. I think about my nieces who are between the ages of 9 and 16 and wonder what food and eating influences they're learning from at home, in schools, on social media, and how those things will shape how they think about healthy habits as adults. So again, this discussion is all about getting you to think more critically about what healthy eating habits look like for you, where do your beliefs come from, and how those beliefs are helping or hindering your goals, and what things you might consider doing differently to better support your goals. I've also referenced a lot of different things here, from the USDA to, you know, the agriculture industry and so many things in between. And to be clear, I'm not trying to villainize everybody. I think everything serves its purpose. And again, there are good-hearted people in these industries as well. I just want to put that out there that I'm not attacking anything. I just really want you to approach all of this with eyes wide open and think critically before you just take everything at face value. For me, I try to think in terms of more variety and more whole foods. Something else my mom taught me was always try to make sure you have at least three colors on your plate. This is something I'll continue to take with me because whole foods of varying colors are going to provide different nutrients, and a variety of nutrients helps support a healthy gut microbiome, and that helps support overall health. Do I need to know more than that? Not especially. I mean, it certainly helps to know more than that, but for the sake of not overcomplicating things, including at least three colors on your plate at every meal is pretty solid advice. And yes, you could be the smartass who takes this down the road of, well, my Oreos, Skittles, and cheesecake all have different colors, so I'm good. Hopefully, I don't need to say this at this point, but I do typically mean whole foods when I say three colors. Whole foods being things like the things that you would find around the perimeter of the grocery store, your produce, your protein sources, things that aren't so much processed and packaged. I'm over-explaining myself at this point, so I'm going to move on. I'm curious what beliefs about food you have or that have stuck with you throughout your life or what you think about this topic. Hit me up on Instagram or Facebook to contribute to this conversation. And if you have any sources of information that you really trust and appreciate, feel free to share that as well. As scary as an abundance of information can be, because it's inevitably riddled with misinformation, I'm always in support of being curious and learning more. Thanks for hanging in there with me for this conversation today. I hope you got something valuable out of it. As always, please go and do something that brings you joy and makes you smile, and I will catch up with you next time. Later, my friends. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Badass is the New Skinny podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend or loved one so that we can grow this badass community. If you have ideas, questions, or your own badass story that you'd like to share, hit me up on Instagram at @badassistheNewSkinny or check out the Badass is the New Skinny Facebook group. I appreciate you being here, my friends. Now make today awesome.